Yep. Got me over here?
We're good.
All right.
Okay, get this junk out of the way. Okay. So let's get a move on here. Hi, everybody. In case you don't know who we are, I'm Rob, and this is Jason.
Hey, hey.
And we are podcasters, which is why we're in here. We do a podcast called Building the Game. We are both aspiring game designers ourselves, and when we were getting started, it's a little closer here. When we were getting started as game designers, we were thinking, gosh, you know, we don't really know what we're doing. We have a lot of ideas, but we don't know how to execute on those. And we went out and tried to find resources online where we could look for advice from other people, other people's experiences, and try and learn from that. And those things didn't exist. And we said, well, you know, why don't we make that happen? Why don't we try and do that? So let's do a podcast about it. Great. What do we know about podcasting? Nothing. We didn't know anything about podcasting. So we said, well, let's try and do a little bit of that too. Let's figure this out and try and share that with people too. And so this is kind of the first opportunity we've had in a more public area to try and talk about our experiences as podcasters, maybe a little bit divorced from our experiences as game designers. Because that's, of course, 50% of what we're doing here is producing a podcast in addition to trying to make games. So we've been doing this for a little over a year, and we've had some ups and downs, and we've spent some money on bad stuff, and we're pretty happy with the setup we've got right now. So we thought we would share with you guys our experiences, answer some questions, and you know maybe we can learn from your experiences as well.
If you have questions, at any time, we're happy to take those. We just ask that you go stand in front of that mic and ask the questions. Mm-hmm. Sorry to make people actually get up to do it, but that way we can get it on.
We can get it recorded, so. Which is the whole point.
And this whole panel will get posted in the next week or two. So
Yeah, it will be available to listen to. So, yeah. So we thought the first thing that we would kind of talk about is that beginning part where you come up with that idea. We already kind of laughed for a second here that the idea is the easy part, right? So for us, one of the things that we feel like a lot of podcasts do is they kind of end up going aimless, you know? They kind of devolve into just a couple of people hanging out in a room and chatting about stuff that's way off topic. And sometimes that can be a lot of fun, but that's not
depending
the kind of
on the people. That can
depending
be super
people,
entertaining.
Right. That's not the kind of show we wanted to make. So these were the kind of decisions that we were thinking about in advance. So we feel like the first thing that you need to do when you have that idea is really focus on that idea and explore that and make sure that you understand what you want your show to really be about. Yeah, I don't know if you guys have any comments on that kind of stuff or personal experiences or anything, but that was super helpful for us. So we decided to make every show basically have the same structure. And having that structure, that kind of guideline, was really important for us because we, listening to other shows, we appreciate shows that have a structure.
One of the first things we did before we even really seriously decided to do a podcast, we said, what are we going to talk about? And we knew we were going to talk about game design and our journey going from people who have no idea what they're doing to people that have somewhat of an idea of what they're doing with game design. And so we just decided to come up with a format. And the format might not mean anything to you guys if you haven't heard the show, but basically we went with the beginning, we do a 2 to 5 minute intro, where we just kind of talk about our week and what we've been doing. Then we roll into about a 10-minute section where we talk about what we've been playing lately. So each of us highlights a game we've been playing. We have some discussion about it. After that, we move into a thing we like to call the mechanic of the week, where we pick a game mechanic and we just kind of break it down. And sometimes we'll try and place it in a game. We'll try and pick a mechanic that doesn't necessarily – it works a certain way, and we'll try and use it a different way and try and make it fresh. And then after that, one of us, we take turns, will pitch a game idea for pretty much the last half of the show. Mm-hmm. And so that when we publish shows, we stick to that format every single episode, with a few exceptions. We did a Gen Con pre-show special. We do that every year.
Right.
And we've been told that has really helped people, that we stick to that format because they know what to expect. I know there's podcasts that I've listened to before where you expect a certain thing, and then that's not what they do. And they keep doing that, and you're finally like, gosh, this is not why I'm listening to this show. I'm listening to the show because I like your format, so just stick to it. So we generally, if we want to break the format, because there are times when you want to do that, we put out a bonus episode. And bonus episodes are anything goes. We could interview someone. We could just play a game, you know. We did one last night. It was just us in our hotel room with like 10 other game designers just drinking and chatting. So so that's kind of the format. Is it's important to have that set, you know.
Yeah. What do you guys want us to talk about? Do you want me to just kind of roll into equipment? What do you think?
Assume we know nothing and how do we take the first start to doing things.
Okay, assume you know nothing.
Assume we barely speak English.
Okay, assume...
We barely know computing. Software.
All right.
Hey.
Okay.
A year ago, that's where
that was
we
us.
Were.
So, yeah. Well, you're at the microphone, so you get the first real question here.
That is my question, because earlier we were talking about... had an idea. I didn't get... any further than that, how did you guys find out what equipment you needed, what software you needed, how to upload, how to get your podcast out there?
Okay, that's an excellent question. So I'll talk about the equipment side. He can talk about the online side. Basically, for equipment, we didn't know what we were doing, so we went to Guitar Center and talked to Steve, because every Guitar Center has a Steve, right? Yeah, yeah. So we went to the microphone area and we said, "Hey, man, we're starting a podcast. We need microphones. We need equipment. What do you recommend?" Okay. And I think we were talking to Steve for about 2 hours, and we still every couple months we'll go back and talk to Steve for a couple hours. And it's not because we want to talk to Steve for a couple hours, but it's because Steve will talk to us for a couple hours.
But you got to set aside a block of time when you go there to see Steve.
So what we learned from that basically is to just not guess. You know, go and ask somebody who already knows all this stuff, you know. And if he's a salesman who thinks he can get a sale out of you, all the better, because he'll teach you everything you need to know. So these microphones that we're using right now, these are Sterling Audio condenser mics, okay? These were mics. These are not the most expensive mics. These are not snowball mics. They have a certain kind of pattern to them. And what we did is we talked with Steve, and he asked us what our setup was going to be, how are we going to be sitting in the room when we're recording, you know, all that kind of stuff. And we talked about all the different microphone options and all the different microphone price levels, you know, and talked through, and in that 2 hours kind of narrowed down to these. Plus, we got these used.
No.
No? I thought we bought these
used. We tried to get these used, I can only speak from personal experience, but I wouldn't recommend buying any mics from Guitar Center used. We had a lot of trouble trying to buy it used, which is, you remember me going to buy it used. You
That's
weren't
right.
there when everything went terrible. So, it's tough. But going and talking to someone and getting, and you don't have to follow their advice. I mean,
no.
if we had the setup Steve had, there'd be like big speakers and amplifiers behind us, because Steve's a rocker and that's what he wants us to do. I mean, really, they're going to try and make you overdo it. And that's cool. If you've got all the money in the world, you should do that by all means, but we don't. So, you know, we try to stick within a budget, and we've bought things piece by piece. We actually started with just a shotgun mic.
I'll show you.
Independent film stuff on the side. So I had a shotgun mic from that. And so two of us talked into a shotgun mic for about 10 or 20 episodes.
So we started out. We started out with this guy here. Just a real simple shotgun mic, okay? It's for getting, you know, general room audio for film projects, right? And we had it, so it was already paid for. So this is really what we started with. And we got this, and we got... whoops, that's not the right box.
So we got a two-input Tascam box.
Tascam US 122 Mark II input box. Okay, so this brings up subject of USB versus XLR cables, okay? Digital versus audio input. We started with an analog audio input with XLR cables. That's what we started with, so that's kind of what we continued with, okay? We had to buy a box that utilized that, and so we just kept moving in that direction. This is a great product. It's really, really excellent, and it worked really, really well for us, but it didn't scale with us. Because as you see, we're using three microphones right now. Sometimes we use three, sometimes we use four, depending on what we've got going on. This only has two inputs, and this was not enough for us. So that was kind of the next, the first big mistake that we made was not thinking
about
into the future.
About a $75 mistake.
About a $75 error. Not
Thank
thinking
you.
Forward in the future. Yeah, I appreciate that. So that was mistake number one. from there, once we recorded a few shows, we used the shotgun mic, and listening back to it, and we just thought, man, that's terrible. That just sounds awful. And so we kind of had to bite the bullet and buy better microphones, which is how we ended up with these guys.
Yep. And at the same time, so we bought the two microphones, and we started using these two microphones with that original box, and then we set up an interview with a designer and went, oh, crap, how are we going to input their voice from Skype? Because there's no more inputs on this. So we switched back to the shotgun mic for a couple episodes when we were doing that and really, really hated that. Once we got done with it,
the quality was just terrible.
No, we can't handle this anymore. So that forced us to upgrade. Right. The one good thing this box did, though, that really helped with, this box showed us that we really liked the Tascam products.
Yep.
And we really liked the interface on those. So when we needed to buy a bigger one,
we bought a new Tascam, and I won't hold this one up because it's running our show right now. But this is a Tascam US600, which is basically the same idea as this guy, but it has four inputs instead of just two. Okay. So let's start talking about software then. When we started recording, we were using Audacity. I'm sure most of you guys probably know what Audacity is. Okay, some yeses, some
free.
Nos. It's a free open source software package for audio recording and editing. And it's great because it's free. That's really the only reason it's great. It's also really unstable and crashes a lot, and that was a pain.
And much like the US 122 Mark II, it only can take two inputs.
Two inputs, yeah. It only understands stereo input or two mono inputs. So that was our next big hurdle. And that worked okay when it was just two of us, but whenever we were doing an interview with somebody, it was not good enough. So we had to then upgrade. Now, the Tascam products come with software called Cubase. This specific is Cubase LE5. Cubase is a pretty cool piece of software, and it's free with the products, but it's also really difficult to learn, and their website and their help stuff support is just awful. So eventually, we moved and we bought Sony Acid Studio. So we're using Acid Music Studio 9 right now for our recording. And that seems to be the best thing we found so far.
It's been the most solid thing we've had.
Yeah. It's like a $200 package, but I found it on sale at Best Buy, I think, for $40 one day. So if you look around, you can find a good deal on it. Acid is also what we used to create our theme song, because it's basically a looping software. So you buy it, it comes with a whole bunch of just audio loops, just thousands of them. And it's an easy way to make free music for your opening or closing your show, which was great.
We talk about online stuff?
Yeah.
Okay, so you got a podcast, you got to host it somewhere, right? I actually already had hosting because I host some other websites. I don't know a ton about being a web host or anything like that, but we do host some websites. So I've got this. I use Bluehost. It's pretty cheap. So I put a website out there. We did it with WordPress because I'm not some great web programmer. But there are some powerful templates with WordPress if you know which ones to use. We specifically use one on our podcast site called Weaver 2. And it is your best friend if you don't know anything about how to use WordPress. Because everything in it is customizable without having to know how to code. You can do it all with just switches, and you'll play around a lot trying to get it to work right, and you might get it wrong, but it's very forgiving. So you check the box, I can't see anything on the website. Check the box, uncheck the box, and now it's back. So that's a little drastic, but we've had things like that happen. So we use that for the base. Now, to publish the podcast, theoretically, you want it on iTunes. You want it available on your website, which sounds really complicated, and it's really not. We use a product called PowerPress. It's free. It integrates super well with WordPress. It's made by a company called Blueberry. I think it's Blubrry. No E's in there. One of the owners, I've been able to email him and get detailed help whenever we've had trouble getting something to work. I mean, he's awesome. And it's free. And they've got amazing stat tracking software. So that's really helpful. And it's all free. And that's just great, because that has made it easy to get it on iTunes for them to track it. Publishing it is just as easy as publishing a WordPress blog post, which if anybody's ever published anything online, WordPress is about the easiest way you're ever going to do that. That was a little bit of a painful process at first. Yeah. I mean, I think 2 days before the first show published, I was having trouble getting it to publish, kind of as a test. But again, the guy from Blueberry and PowerPress was willing to email back and forth with me and my dumb self and just keep giving me great advice for how I should fix it. So now that's kind of on coasting mode, you know, that's been pretty
easy. Set up once and it works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the worst thing that can happen is I forget to link the show and then it doesn't show up and then I link the show and it works. I mean, it's not. Yeah. And iTunes will host as many, I think, episodes as you want them to. This software recommends you only host 10 episodes on iTunes at a time. So it hosts our 10 most recent episodes. And then our website, we just built in an episode list with all the links to the actual shows so that there's a nice archive. We find people really like that. We noticed a lot of our old shows got a lot more traction and listening once we added that in, because otherwise people didn't know. They could go back through the posts one by one, but nobody wants to do that. Where this way, they click a button and boom, ta-da, there it is.
I guess I can also talk a little bit about audio quality. We wanted to sound good because one of my pet peeves is podcasts recorded on Skype with two people on different sides of the country with a two-second delay between everything they say, and I find that so annoying. And that's me. I mean, a lot of people don't care about that, but that's a pet peeve of mine. So when we did that, we had to make sure that if we're going to do this, we're going to do it in a way that made us happy, that we would be comfortable listening to. So we set up a studio in my house, and he comes over every other week and record two shows in the room, okay? And we did the whole nine yards, hanging blankets on the walls and soundproofing, and we didn't bring our pop screens with us. Normally we have pop screens, though, and on and on and on. And so that was important to us. You can do the same thing just with a simple computer mic that you plug in your computer, and that'll work, and it'll sound okay. It'll still sound better than Skype. But how much you guys know about audio stuff. I don't know a ton, but there's a device inside any of the stuff called a preamp that converts that analog signal into a digital signal. And the preamp in your computer is about as bare bones as you can get. It just allows you to get sound from one place to the other. That was not good enough for us. We tested that. We didn't like the way it sounded, which is why we bought this external box, because we needed something to do the XLR input to convert it to a digital signal to go into the computer. And the preamp that is in these boxes is much, much higher quality. I mean, these are professional studio quality machines here. They're pretty low priced because they're small. They don't have a lot of features. But
we don't need a lot of features.
We don't need a lot of features. We're not recording music. We're just recording voices, and it's everything that we need.
And for the Skype comment, if you are Skyping a podcast, if you have a good mic and the other person has a good mic,
it's okay.
With editing, you can make it better because you can cut out those pauses. You know, you're still going to talk over each other sometimes because when we interview people, we generally use Skype, and we have problems with that. But, you know, if you're willing to put some more editing time in, the problem is a lot of the podcasts we've listened to that do the Skype thing don't do any editing. So it's a lot of pauses and people talking over each other and more pauses. So,
yeah. Question.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up editing because that's a lot of what I'm curious about. Mm-hmm. So, you know, right now this is very casual sort of conversation. How long is your guys' podcast?
About an hour.
So how much do you record actual, you know, audio? How long do you spend cleaning that up? I feel like you could, you know, polish it forever and get it just perfect, or you could just let it rip, be natural, not do second takes. What do you guys think? What's your audience like?
Yeah, that's a good question. And a lot of that, of course, is going to be your own personal taste as to what kind of show you want to create. For us, we generally just kind of post the show as is. I mean, if we'll get to a point maybe where we'll pause between segments, I cut that stuff out. He coughs a lot. He sniffles a lot. I cut all that out, you know.
It's true. I mess with the mic a lot.
Yeah, he's always bumping stuff. Sometimes leave it in because it's funny. Sometimes I cut it out because it's annoying. But I mean, we want our podcast to feel conversational, and we want people to feel like they are a part of our conversation. So we kind of leave in some pauses and some dead air now and then while we're thinking about stuff. Again, because that kind of fits the format of our show. We're pitching new game ideas. We're trying to come up with new ideas while we're recording. And so it feels more natural.
And we only usually do second takes if there's an issue.
Right.
Now we're not bashing people that do a lot of editing. We have some really good friends that do a podcast called Flip the Table. And it's a board game podcast where they play terrible old board games and then make fun of them. And it's very entertaining, super produced. I mean, they edit it produced to the maximum.
Yeah.
When we do our podcast, Rob records his intro right live in the studio. And if we have a guest, they hear Rob do that. Whereas I know Chris from Flip the Table, he does that all afterwards. And, yeah. You know, so there's nothing wrong with that. It just, for us, it needs to feel conversational, and it feels less conversational if you do it that way.
Yeah, and then total editing time for me personally when I'm editing a show. I'll sit down and I'll listen to the whole show through, basically a full time, and I'll do some big edits as I go, and then I'll go through it a second time and just cut out little bits and pieces, his sniffles, you know. That's when I attack on the opening and closing music for that. So, about 2 hours to edit an hour show for me personally.
Okay, yeah. So just a follow-up to that. Sitting down, recording it, editing it, uploading it, publishing it, whatever you got to do on that side, how many hours would it take, do you think, on average, now that you're rolling, to get one podcast up there? And how long did that take in the beginning? So sure. I can think about, like, time budgeting.
Yeah, well, we generally record 2 episodes a night, and we'll spend about 3.5 hours recording 2-hour-long shows.
And I mean, a lot of that's dead time in between because we're friends and we talk. And,
right. You know. Right. But just kind of that time to just talk about what we're going to talk about,
right.
get ourselves organized for the 2 episodes. So for actual recording time, call it 1.5 hours, maybe 1 hour and 45 minutes to record 1 hour-long show. Okay. And then for editing, another 2 hours. I don't know how long you spend on show notes.
Usually about, I listen to the show and I'm usually able to accomplish the show notes. Show notes are an interesting thing. I'll just hit on for a minute.
Yeah,
here.
Sure.
When we started, I was crazy about show notes. I mean, we mentioned a game, I would BGG link it. I want everybody to know, we found that most people weren't using that. I could look at the stats and say, most people aren't even coming to our website. But we need to have show notes because I want somebody to be able to look at the show notes if they want to and say, oh, okay, this is, they're going to, Rob's going to pitch a game called.
Hitting the table.
Oh, sorry. Rob's going to pitch a game called this on this episode. We're going to talk about this mechanic. So we kind of, they're a little more bare bones than they were. I don't link as many games just because people weren't using it. So, that's something I know some people that do these detailed show notes where it's like at 4 minutes and 45 seconds, we talk about this. And if you like doing that, go for it. But understand that people may not use it.
Yeah. So I would say man hours per episode, we're probably putting in 4 to 5 man hours per episode, per 1 hour episode. It's probably about a fair estimate. Yeah. Other questions?
You could certainly put in less than that. I mean,
yeah.
And still have a perfectly great podcast.
Yeah.
Quick question. What would you recommend if you were all away from each other? Like, for example, the podcast I do with two other guys. One guy lives in South Toronto, the other guy lives in North Toronto, and I live 6 hours north of Toronto.
Okay.
So we get together and we have no choice but to use Skype.
Sure.
What other kind of software? Like, I use CallGraph, but is there anything else that you could recommend to use?
Well, we do Skype recording sometimes because we need to interview people from all over the country. Yeah. What we do, I didn't bring that cable. But because I didn't think we would need it. But we have an XLR cable on one end, and it's just a standard
mini phono
jack on the other side. We plug that into his iPhone, and we do Skype or FaceTime on his iPhone right there in the room. It connects to his Wi-Fi, and then it actually ends up sounding really good because the iPhone has a pretty good microphone on it.
And in addition to that, what's helpful is it doesn't – the computer sometimes can slow down running the – music software, yeah. And also the Skype with the internet connection. Mm-hmm. So we would have some more lag with that. This right. got rid of a lot of that because yeah. now it's on the phone to do all that processing, and it's just another signal that goes into our box that's merged with right. the other signals and goes into the computer. So
it's nice to take that pressure off the computer, which is already trying to record all the stuff as it's being dumped in there, for it to have to do all that and handle the audio stuff from Skype. It's nice to not have to have all that dependent on one thing.
But one suggestion, though,
yeah.
for what you're asking, we've interviewed some people, and we've actually used FaceTime, so we can actually see the person when we're interviewing them.
Which
that makes a huge difference.
Makes a massive difference.
Because you don't have those pauses as much because you can watch the person, right?
Because body language, eye contact, it's a big part of why
right.
we like being together.
Well, we use Skype Premium, so we have that conference option.
Oh, okay.
Option.
Well, that's
yes.
great.
Right.
That's great.
I was going to suggest Google Hangout, but yeah, that's I would do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I think that's really important.
The video, I think, I mean, try it. Maybe you end up not liking it, but I feel like it helps. Mm-hmm. We have a lot less awkward pauses when when that's the case.
Now, is there any other software apart from CallGraph? You've heard of CallGraph, I assume?
No, I haven't used it.
No, I have not.
Oh, CallGraph is just basically the recording base. It's recording kind of like what you do with the Sony thing.
Sure.
But it just records, and because we're all from Skype, right, you don't need more than two channels.
Yeah.
The two guys coming in on Skype and myself that's going input.
Okay.
But is there any other software that you can use, I mean, apart from the Sony thing, that you would recommend maybe for distance?
Well, the three that we've tried are Audacity, Cubase, and Acid. And we've been very happy with Acid so far. I'm sure there's plenty of other stuff out there, but that's all I have personal experience with, so I'm not really sure. I don't know. CallGraph, though, it's called.
CallGraph. And you can actually write notes as you're going, too.
Oh, yeah?
So whenever there's pauses and stuff, and just to help with editing, if anybody wants to do this.
Yeah.
But you can actually put notes as you're recording your podcast. Say if somebody coughs.
Uh-huh.
You can say, okay, so-and-so coughed.
Oh.
And you can come back to it while you're editing. So you edit backwards, and you just take out all the stuff as you go in.
That's pretty cool.
That's really
cool.
Yeah,
that's good to know. Thank you. Yeah. I realized I didn't mention Levelator. Do you guys know Levelator? Mm-hmm. Levelator is great. Because a big part of editing is figuring out your levels, you know, your things when people are blowing out the microphone and times when people are way too quiet on the microphone. You notice that I'm kind of back and forth here on the microphone, sometimes close, and I'm not too worried about that. If I had to do all that manually to fix all those levels, you can guarantee I'd be holding my head very, very steady the whole time and talking directly to my, you know, all that stuff. But I'm not so worried about that because Levelator is a free open source program that does all that for you. We learned about that from the Flip Table friends. It is super, super cool. All right. It's not going to fix problems. It's when you blow out the mic, it's not going to fix that, but it's going to make it so your listeners don't hurt their ears. And when somebody's sitting too far back from the mic, it'll turn that volume up automatically so you don't have to strain to hear it. It's great.
And another issue we have is Rob is generally louder than I am.
Yeah.
So that just fixes that. There's no, you used to have to go in and try and manually level, you know, and
right.
It's just so much easier.
Yeah, Levelator.
It's free. There's no reason not to use it.
Yeah, it's great. It's excellent.
And literally, I mean, I've watched you do it. You drag it to the icon, and then magic happens, and then it sounds good.
Yeah.
And that's the best description I can give you.
Yeah.
In fact, that's how Chris explained it to us.
The downside, though, is that it's not supported anymore. Whoever put it out, they supported it for a little while, and then they said, I'm done with this. So you can still get it, but if you need support, you're going to have to go to user forums and ask questions that way. You're not going to be able to talk to the publisher, to the creator of it. So it's something to be wary of. And I don't think it works on Mac. I think it only works on PC. Yeah. Oh, it does?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Right.
Okay, excellent. Good.
Good to know.
Good.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm thinking Windows 8. I don't think it works on Windows 8.
No, that was the problem because Flip the Table wasn't able to use it for a while because they switched to Windows 8. And since no one supports it, there's no more.
Right. It's never going to. Question.
This does not necessarily pertain to the act of podcasting, but clearly you guys have T-shirts.
Yeah.
You want to, I mean, you do a podcast, you want to have a listener base, you want to have a fan base. What do you do in terms of getting word out there and doing promotion? I mean, there's obviously you have your website, you have social media, but what do you guys do to actually cultivate that following?
That's a good question, too. Best thing that we ever did was come to Gen Con last year and hand out business cards and dice. Free dice with our logo on it, because that allowed us just to meet people, look them in the eye, and shake their hand, and say, "Hey, we've got this cool podcast that you should check out." And our numbers, I think, went up 5 times over.
It was 1,000%
Like from the month before Gen Con to the month after Gen Con, and we've never looked back since. And we're hoping we're doing more of this kind of thing here this weekend because we want to meet more people and talk to more people about the show. So getting out there, going to events and talking to people is super, super helpful. And if you can hand them a business card or hand them a die with your logo on it, that's memorable. We had T-shirts made for ourselves, but they were kind of expensive, so we didn't have any to give away or anything.
But we do have dice to give away.
We do have dice. We give everybody in here a dice before you leave.
But social media is also really good. We're both on Twitter.
Twitter is the best.
And Rob made our logos with our little stand up and show them. So it's got both of us on
very
there.
Awkward and stupid.
Can you move here?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Hey, there you go.
That's why it was awkward.
Yeah.
Say it. He was being sarcastic.
Okay.
So we use those as our Twitter avatars.
Yeah.
So people instantly recognize it, you know, and that's the only time that's not useful is when you come to Gen Con and people don't recognize you because you don't have a big cartoon face over your head.
Yeah, but so the Twitter avatar for our podcast is the whole logo. Mine is my avatar, his avatar, so people can see those three things and kind of key them together. They're all kind of formatted the same, so that familiarity, people can link us all together. Of course, we always mention our Twitter names every show. And then interviewing as many people as we can in the community that we're trying to reach out to, because all those people already have their own audiences, you know. And if we can talk to those people and then they say, hey, I was just on this podcast, you should listen to me on this podcast, that's a great way also for us to reach a new audience.
So when you're doing your podcast, I'm sure you have nothing but nice things to say about all of the games and all of the people you talk to. But, you know, when you're dealing, you know, with like a community and, you know, products and people trying to make money off this stuff, do you have any suggestions around, you know, copyright law and, you know, not trying to offend people or any cease and desist stuff? Or do you just kind of let it go and you think it's going to be good? What are your thoughts on
that?
Well,
can I start with this one?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, we pretty much only talk about games we like. And if we bash a game, it's usually because it's a big mass market game and nobody's feelings are going to be hurt if we make fun of Monopoly, right? I mean, so we try and be positive about it. But in addition to that, for copyright stuff, as long as you're just mentioning the games, you're never going to run into any issues. The first theme song we had was Creative Commons, and we're also not trying to make money off our podcast. I mean, the best thing that could happen to us for a podcast that might benefit us are, like, I recently ran a Kickstarter for a game, and it succeeded, and, you know, a few dozen
large
people
thanks from, to our audience.
Yeah, from our audience backed the game, you know, and spread the word for us and got other people to back the game, and, you know, that's really helpful, you know, so that there's, like, a fringe benefit of it, right? But, you know, as for the copyright things, I don't think that would ever be an issue.
No, I mean, copyright laws protect the rights of a journalist to be journalistic, you know.
We're definitely journalists.
Well, I think in the eyes of the law, I think we are considered journalists, you know, or a news source of some kind. Well, so copyright, we're not too concerned, but because we're also not just releasing whole copyrighted materials, you know, we're
happening back there.
I don't know what's
like
going on.
Like they're killing
there.
Like some rare exotic bird back there.
Yeah.
Well, one other thing to point out too is, you know, a lot of podcasts take review copies. So
yeah.
You send them their game. You send them your game, and we play it, and then we say it was awesome on the air, or we say it was terrible, and your feelings are hurt, and you're mad because you sent us a game. We didn't want to deal with that, so we don't take review copies. We don't do reviews. We have fans and listeners who we talk to who are other game designers, because a lot of our audience are game designers, because that's why they listen to the show. And the friends of ours who we've made from the show will send us copies of their prototype. Mm-hmm. With the rule that we're going to talk about it possibly on the show. We're not going to promise that, because if we don't like it, we're not going to talk about it on the show, because we don't want to be negative. But we might talk about it on the show, mm-hmm. But we will not give a review of it. And that's just because that just keeps us out of that realm. You know, that keeps us, we feel unbiased that way.
Yeah. Sometimes, though, you kind of have to say something negative, because you need to be honest with yourself and honest with your audience.
Oh, yeah. We certainly don't, you know, yeah. That's why if we played a game from a friend designer and it was just terrible, we're just not going to talk about it on the show, because if there's not anything good to say, right?
Or if we would talk about it in terms of being constructive, you know?
Right.
Because that's part of the point.
That's a good point.
But, you know, I mean, if we flat out play a bad game that we think is bad and people are asking us about it, we need to be honest about that, you know? And if we make an enemy, oh, well.
And we have done that. I mean,
yeah.
We notoriously have a fight back and forth every other week about the fact that I hate Formula D and think it's not a good game, and Rob is a huge fan of it, so...
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. Next question.
So how do you find that people consume the media? Meaning, do they listen for the whole hour? Do people jump to, I just want to hear the game mechanic pitch of the week? Mm-hmm. Are people listening at work? Are they listening on their commute? How do people listen to your show? But in a broader spectrum, how do people consume podcast media in general? I don't know.
In the conversation that I've had with people in my own personal experience, it's I listen at work myself when I'm doing other things. I think a lot of people listen on their commutes to and from work as well. I don't know anybody. Maybe some of you guys would disagree, but I don't know anybody who sits down in their living room at home and just turns on a podcast and sits there and listens. I don't think anybody does that anymore. All right.
Guilty.
Yeah. Good for you guys. Great. You probably get to listen to a lot more podcasts than we do.
I'll never say that again now. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm like a large percentage.
Yeah, wow, that's great. Well, yeah, so I don't really know the answer to that. It's a good question.
Well, I can speak to the stats and how they work. So we publish an episode. It technically Monday is our publish date. But here's a good, really good piece of advice. Best piece of advice I read about doing a podcast. Consistency builds an audience. If you say we're going to publish Monday every week, you publish Monday every week. Because the week you don't publish and somebody goes out there and it's not there, they may have just lost faith. They may stop listening to your podcast because so many podcasts are inconsistent. Like, oh, Building the Game didn't publish this week. Maybe they're not doing it anymore. I guess I just won't check next time. Now, that's obviously an exaggeration. That doesn't always happen, but it can. And there are podcasts I've listened to, and because they're sporadic, I just don't want to deal with it. So I just stop listening. So we found that it's very true. If we are consistent and we have not missed the deadline, we actually, because we're so anal about it, we actually publish on Sundays, with technically Monday being our scheduled publish date. Like when Rob says, today is blah, blah, blah on the podcast, it's that Monday. That's the backup. So if there's a huge problem on Sunday, we still have a day to get it out there. Mm-hmm. So that is really helpful in building a consistent audience. But so the show goes out on Sunday night. We get a few people on Sunday that will download it. And we do that too because we know people want to listen to it at work on Monday. Monday is a big day. Like Monday, we get a lot of listens. And then from there, it tapers down throughout the week. And then, you know, it spikes back up again on Monday. But we also see a lot of people that are 2 to 5 weeks behind, I would say, on the show. Because it's a podcast. You don't have to listen to it live. I mean, there are very few things you miss out on. I mean, sometimes we'll do a contest here and there. And if you didn't listen for a month, you might miss out on that. But we also do try and be respectful and run longer contests to cover that. So. Mm-hmm.
So then is 1 hour the optimum time frame? Because a lot of the podcasts I listen to are in the 40 to 60 minute range. But what I was thinking of doing is something that is much shorter increments.
Yeah, that's a good question, too. My favorite podcasts are the ones that are 3 and 4 hours long. Because I can hit play on my iPod at work and just listen to a whole episode all morning and go to lunch and then start the next one. And I love that personally. But I don't want to make that podcast because, oh my God, you know, I don't want to be responsible for that. So shorter form podcasts, I listen to a lot of those too. And I'm always disappointed because they ended so soon. And I was like, oh, man, I love this show. I didn't want it to end already. That said, I mean, if that's the format you're going for, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean,
well, and I'm the opposite. Okay. If a 4-hour podcast sounds like beating my head against the wall. So, you know, I would rather listen to a shorter podcast.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hog the microphone.
Nope.
I'm the general manager of a 4-store comic and game chain in the St. Louis area.
Okay.
And a couple of my employees do a comic book review show on YouTube. And I've been wanting to do like radio spots. I don't know if you're familiar with an old radio guy named Phil Hendry.
It's familiar, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah. But I want to do sort of Phil Hendry stuff. I want to do like the GMs and do stuff that would be related to work so that even though I don't work the sales floor anymore, people know that I run the company, but I'm also a gamer and do sort of like a Ms. Manners tabletop gaming advice and etiquette column, but it would be sort of spoofish. So my advice would be real, but the letters would be fake. So the emails and everything would all be fictitious. But my idea would be to do them in like 4 and 5 minute increments and then maybe record a couple times a week.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. I mean,
absolutely.
There's no wrong way to do it. I think there's an audience for every type of podcast and for every length of podcast and really just what works for you. Certainly 40 to 60 minutes is kind of the golden zone.
Seems
for
to
podcasts.
Be, yeah.
I mean, that's where most of them fall, but I think that's just because that's where most of them fall. So when somebody goes into a new podcast, they're like, well, most people are around 40, 60 minutes. I guess we'll shoot for that. I mean, that's kind of what we did. Mm-hmm. So,
okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Along the same lines, you know, he's talking about the optimum amount of time for a podcast. And, you know, on the different podcasts I listen, it seems like the optimum amount of people is two. So there's some bantering going on between. But is there, like, is it easy, or have you seen a spike if it's just one person or if it's more than two?
Well, you know, I think if you're doing a short-form podcast like that, it would make sense to have just one guy because you want to get your advice, you want to get your message out there and be done with it. But having two of us out there for that hour-long show, it's nice just to kind of have somebody else to talk to having two opinions. Again, because our show is a very conversational show, you know, that's the format for us. So we really, really appreciate having two voices, having two opinions, two points of view, and we find that really beneficial. But I mean, that said, if you are your own guy and you're doing an hour long show and you feel like you've got a lot to say, go for it. And your audience will tell you if they like it or not, you know.
Two questions, both of them brief. One, approximately how much money did you spend to start your podcast? Two, could each of you name one or two favorite podcasts?
Sure. What do you think we spent? Are we in the $400 range, or are we
probably
more?
Probably closer to five.
Closer to five.
But we didn't spend that all at once.
Yeah.
You know, these mics, not on sale, are $100 a piece.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But we were lucked out, and when we bought the first two, they were on sale for $79. So, you know, we saved $40 right there. The Tascam box was close to $100 for that one.
Yeah, I think it was about $85, $90.
So this one of these will run you some. I think this one will probably run you $400+, but I've had this forever, so that didn't cost us a dime. The cables will surprise you.
Yeah, cables can be real expensive.
If you're buying, my recommendation is if you're buying short cables, like we have the desktop tables, we buy like the $40 cables. It's like $40 for a 5-foot cable. For the long cable that's running over to you guys, it was $15 for a 25-foot cable.
Because we're going to use it once a year.
Yeah, now if you're going to have them together and they cross, you're going to get that interference. With these fancy cables we have, you do not have that.
Yeah.
So if you're going to use the cheaper cables, you just make sure they don't cross, and you probably will be okay. The Guitar Center, Steve, really wanted us to buy the super expensive long cable that was like $4,000, and we just told him no. So.
Yeah. And the other question was our favorites.
Yeah, one or two favorite podcasts.
My number one favorite podcast is Giant Bombcast. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. But it's a video game podcast. These guys who run GiantBomb.com, it's one of those 2.5, 3.5, 4-hour podcasts where they just hang out in a room and talk about video games and whatever else they want to talk about. And it's one of those shows that's really, really unstructured, which normally drives me crazy. But all those guys are so funny that I really enjoy it a lot. And then I like Role Playing Public Radio. Those guys do a lot of actual play podcasts that I just... Man, I will eat those up. I love those guys so much. Yeah,
I think mine, Flip the Table, I mentioned earlier. And then I haven't listened in a while, and I can't remember. What is that? What's the paranormal podcast guy?
It's the paranormal podcast with Jim Harrell.
But no, it's the campfire.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, people just call in and tell ghost stories that are supposed to be real, and they're very suspect. But it's really, really entertaining.
It's a lot of fun.
Is it called Jim Harrell?
It's called The Campfire,
And
I think it's The Campfire
Jim Harrell. Jim Harrell has, like, the best podcasting voice ever.
Yeah, he's really good. Yeah.
I think we got time for one more question, so we'll probably have to end a few minutes early so we can tear down.
Yeah.
Here I am at the end again.
but it's early, so it's okay.
So, anyway, I have a kind of question about the format for a person who's starting off with having never done a podcast before, but still really interested in sharing the information I have available. One of the podcast series I listen to is the Frog Pants Network, in which involves like the Instance or the Morning Stream. And oftentimes those guys deal out portions of the insets of their shows to other people.
Sure.
Who then create their own 5 to 10 minute little sections that are injected at the end. In the form of the Instance, it's like a little spoof at the end, or informations about different parts of the game of World of Warcraft. The Morning Stream is more like just a morning talk show. They kind of throw in like the Trek Nerd and other various things. What kind of is your view on, is it better to try to find someone who already has an existing podcast that you can kind of right on the heels, or
I think anytime you can connect with other people to try and either create or improve upon a community, I think that's a good thing. Because if you can contribute to a community, then the community will help you be successful as well. So yeah, I think that can be a great idea. You know, if that's the show you want to make, and if that's the show you want to be a part of, and that's what you, I mean, ultimately you should make a show that you would want to listen to, right? Mm-hmm. And if that's a show that you would enjoy listening to, then you should do that. I mean, the last thing I would ever say is make a show that you don't care about. I mean,
right, you're going to get real bored.
That's a way to fail right there. Yeah. So I mean, if that's something that you enjoy and you like hearing and you want to be a part of that, do it. Yeah, do it. Cool. Well, thanks, guys. Thank you so much for hanging out. I'm going to start tearing down. Jason has some dice he can hand out here while we pull this all apart. So thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.